It was too hard. Being there, in this house, was too hard. I ran up the stairs as fast as I could. I took off Conrad's necklace, and I changed out of my clothes and into Taylor's bikini. I didn't care how stupid I looked in it. I just wanted to be in the water. I wanted to be where I didn't have to think about anything, where nothing else existed. I would swim and float and breathe in and out and just be. My old Ralph Lauren teddy bear towel was in the linen closet just like always. I put it around my shoulders like a blanket and headed outside. Jeremiah was eating an egg sandwich and swigging from a carton of milk.
"Hey," he said.
"Hey, I'm going to swim." I didn't ask where Conrad was, and I didn't invite Jeremiah to join me. I needed a moment just by myself. I pushed the sliding door open and closed it without waiting for him to answer me. I threw my towel onto a chair and swan-dived in. I didn't come up for air right away. I stayed down under. I held my breath until the very last second. When I came up, I felt like I could breathe again, like my muscles were relaxing. I swam back and forth. Here, nothing else existed. Here, I didn't have to think. Each time I went under, I held my breath for as long as I could. Underwater, I heard Jeremiah call my name. Reluctantly, I came up to the surface, and he was crouching by the side of the pool.
"I'm gonna go out for a while. Maybe I'll pick up a pizza at Nello's," he said, standing up.
I pushed my hair out of my eyes. "But you just ate a sandwich, and you had all those dirt bombs.
I'm a growing boy." And that was an hour and a half ago.
An hour and a half ago? Had I been swimming for an hour and a half? It felt like minutes. "Oh," I said. I examined my fingers. They were totally pruned.
"Carry on,"
Jeremiah said, saluting me. Kicking off the side of the pool, I said, "See ya." Then I swam as quick as I could to the other side and flip-turned, just in case he was still watching. He'd always admired my flip turns. I stayed in the pool for another hour. When I came up for air after my last lap, I saw that Conrad was sitting in the chair where I'd left my towel. He held it out to me silently. I climbed out of the pool. Suddenly, I was shivering. I took the towel from him and wrapped it around my body. He did not look at me.
"Do you still pretend you're at the Olympics?"
he asked me. I started, and then I shook my head and sat down next to him. "No," I said, and the word hung in the air. I hugged my knees to my chest. "Not anymore."
"When you swim,"
he started to say. I thought he wasn't going to continue, but then he said,
"You wouldn't notice if the house was on fire. You're so into what you're doing, it's like you're someplace else."
He said it with grudging respect, like he'd been watching me for a long time, like he'd been watching me for years, which I guess he had. I opened my mouth to respond, but he was already standing up, going back into the house. As he closed the sliding door, I called out, "That's why I like it!" Chapter 22. I was back in my room, about to change out of my bikini when my phone rang. It was Steven's ringtone, a Taylor Swift song he pretended to hate, but secretly loved. For a second, I thought about not answering. But if I didn't pick up, he'd only call back until I did. He was annoying that way. "Hello?" I said it like a question, like I didn't already know it was Steven.
"Hey," he said, "I don't know where you are. But I know you're not with Taylor."
"How do you know that?" I whispered.
"I just ran into her at the mall. She's worse than you at lying. Where the hell are you?"
I bit my upper lip and I said, "At the summer house. In Cousins."
"What?"
he sort of yelled.
"Why?"
"It's kind of a long story. Jeremiah needed my help with Conrad."
"So he called you?"
My brother's voice was incredulous and also the tiniest bit jealous.
"Yeah?"
He was dying to ask me more, but I was banking on the fact that his pride wouldn't let him. Steven hated being left out. He was silent for a moment, and in those seconds, I knew he was wondering about all the summer house stuff we were doing without him. At last he said,
"Mom's gonna be so pissed." What do you care? I don't care, but Mom will. Steven, chill out. I'll be home soon. We just have to do one last thing.
What last thing?
It killed him that I knew something he didn't, that for once, he was the odd man out. I thought I'd take more pleasure in it, but I felt oddly sorry for him. So, instead of gloating the way I normally would, I said, Conrad took off from summer school and we have to get him back in time for midterms on Monday. That would be the last thing I would do for him. Get him to school. And then he'd be free. And so would I. After Stephen and I got off the phone, I heard a car pull up in front of the house. I looked out the window and there was a red Honda. A car I didn't recognize. We almost never had visitors at the summer house. I dragged a comb through my hair and hurried down the steps with my towel wrapped around me. I stopped when I saw Conrad open the door, and a woman walked in. She was petite, with bleached blonde hair that was in a messy bun, and she wore black pants and a silk coral blouse. Her fingernails were painted to match. She had a big folder in her hand and a set of keys. "Well, hello there," she said. She was surprised to see him as if she was the one who was supposed to be there and he wasn't.
Hello, Conrad said. Can I help you?
You must be Conrad, she said. We spoke on the phone. I'm Sandy Donati, your dad's real estate agent.
Conrad said nothing. She wagged her finger at him playfully.
You told me your dad changed his mind about the sale.
When Conrad still said nothing, she looked around and saw me standing at the bottom of the stairs. She frowned and said,
I'm just here to check on the house, make sure everything's coming along and getting packed up.
Yeah, I sent the movers away, Conrad said casually.
I really wish you hadn't done that, she said, her lips tight.
When Conrad shrugged, she added,
I was told the house would be empty.
You were given erroneous information. I'll be here for the rest of the summer.
He gestured at me. That's Belly.
Belly,
she repeated.
Yep, she's my girlfriend.
I think I choked out loud. Crossing his arms and leaning against the wall, he continued,
And you and my dad met how?
Sandy Donati flushed.
We met when he decided to put the house up for sale, she snapped.
Well, the thing is, Sandy, it's not his house to sell. It's my mother's house, actually. Did my dad tell you that?
Yes.
Then I guess he also told you she's dead.
Sandy hesitated. Her anger seemed to evaporate at the mention of dead mothers. She was so uncomfortable, she was shifting toward the door.
Yes, he did tell me that. I'm very sorry for your loss,
Conrad said.
Thank you, Sandy. That means a lot, coming from you.
Her eyes darted around the room one last time.
Well, I'm going to talk things over with your dad, and then I'll be back.
You do that. Make sure you let him know the house is off the market.
She pursed her lips and then opened her mouth to speak, but thought better of it. Conrad opened the door for her, and then she was gone. I let out a big breath. A million thoughts were running through my head. I'm ashamed to say that girlfriend was pretty near the top of the list. Conrad didn't look at me when he said,
Don't tell Jeremiah about the house.
Why not? I asked. My mind was still lingering on the word girlfriend. He took so long to answer me that I was already walking back upstairs when he said,
I'll tell him about it. I just don't want him to know yet. About our dad.
I stopped walking. Without thinking, I said, What do you mean?
You know what I mean.
Conrad looked at me, his eyes steady. I suppose I did know. He wanted to protect Jeremiah from the fact that his dad was an asshole. But it wasn't like Jeremiah didn't already know who his dad was. It wasn't like Jeremiah was some dumb kid without a clue. He had a right to know if the house was for sale. I guessed Conrad read all of this on my face because he said in that mocking, careless way of his,
So can you do that for me, Belly? Can you keep a secret from your BFF, Jeremiah? I know you two don't keep secrets from each other, but can you handle it just this once?
When I glared at him, all ready to tell him what he could do with his secret, he said,
Please.
and his voice was pleading. So I said, all right, for now.
Thank you,
he said, and he brushed past me and headed upstairs. His bedroom door closed, and the air conditioning kicked on. I stayed put. It took a minute for everything to sink in. Conrad didn't just run away to surf. He didn't run away for the sake of running away. He came to save the house. Chapter 23. Later that afternoon, Jeremiah and Conrad went surfing again. I thought maybe Conrad wanted to tell him about the house, just the two of them, and maybe Jeremiah wanted to try and talk to Conrad about school again, just the two of them. That was fine by me. I was content just watching. I watched them from the porch. I sat in a deck chair with my towel wrapped tight around me. There was something so comforting and right about coming out of the pool wet and your mom putting a towel around your shoulders, like a cape. Even without a mother there to do it for you, it was good, cozy, achingly familiar in a way that made me wish I was still 8. 8 was before death or divorce or heartbreak. 8 was just 8. Hot dogs and peanut butter, mosquito bites and splinters, bikes and boogie boards. Tangled hair, sunburned shoulders, Judy Blume, in bed by 9:30. I sat there thinking those melancholy kinds of thoughts for a long while. Someone was barbecuing. I could smell charcoal burning. I wondered if it was the Rubensteins, or maybe it was the Tollers. I wondered if they were grilling burgers or steak. I realized I was hungry. I wandered into the kitchen, but I couldn't find anything to eat. Just Conrad's beer. Taylor told me once that beer was just like bread, all carbohydrates. I figured that, even though I hated the taste of it, I might as well drink it, if it'd fill me up. So I took one and walked back outside with it. I sat back down on my deck chair and popped the top off the can. It snapped very satisfyingly. It was strange to be in this house alone. Not a bad feeling, just a different one. I'd been coming to this house my whole life, and I could count on one hand the number of times I'd been alone in it. I felt older now, which I suppose I was, but I guess I didn't remember feeling old last summer. I took a long sip of beer, and I was glad Jeremiah and Conrad weren't there to see me, because I made a terrible face and I knew they'd give me crap for it. I was taking another sip when I heard someone clear his throat. I looked up, and I nearly choked. It was Mr. Fisher.
Hello, Billy,
he said. He was wearing a suit, like he'd come straight from work, which he probably had, even though it was a Saturday. And somehow his suit wasn't even rumpled, even after a long drive. Hi, Mr. Fisher, I said, and my voice came out all nervous and shaky. My first thought was, we should have just forced Conrad into the car and made him go back to school and take his stupid tests. Giving him time was a huge mistake. I could see that now. I should have pushed Jeremiah into pushing Conrad. Mr. Fisher raised an eyebrow at my beer, and I realized I was still holding it. My fingers laced around it so tight they were numb. I set the beer on the ground, and my hair fell in my face, for which I was glad. It was a moment to hide, to figure out what to say next. I did what I always did. I deferred to the boys. So Conrad and Jeremiah aren't here right now? My mind was racing. They would be back any minute. Mr. Fisher didn't say anything. He just nodded and rubbed the back of his neck. Then he walked up the porch steps and sat in the chair next to mine. He picked up my beer and took a long drink.
How's Conrad?
He asked, setting the beer on his armrest. He's good, I said right away. And then I felt foolish because he wasn't good at all. His mother had just died. He'd run away from school. How could he be good? How could any of us? But I guess, in a sense, he was good because he had purpose again. He had a reason to live. He had a goal. He had an enemy. Those were good incentives, even if the enemy was his father.
I don't know what that kid is thinking,
Mr. Fisher said, shaking his head.
What could I say to that? I never knew what Conrad was thinking. I was sure not many people did. Even still, I felt defensive of him.
Protective.
Mr. Fisher and I sat in silence. Not companionable. Easy silence, but stiff and awful. He never had anything to say to me, and I never knew what to say to him. Finally, he cleared his throat and said, "How's school?" "It's over," I said, chewing on my bottom lip and feeling 12. "Just finished. I'll be a senior this fall."
"Do you know where you want to go to college?"
"Not really." The wrong answer, I knew, because college was one thing Mr. Fisher was interested in talking about. The right kind of college, I mean. And then we were silent again. This was also familiar. That feeling of dread, of impending doom. The feeling that I was in trouble. That we all were. Chapter 24. Milkshakes. Milkshakes were Mr. Fisher's thing. When Mr. Fisher came to the summer house, there were milkshakes all the time. He'd buy a Neapolitan carton of ice cream. Stephen and Conrad were chocolate, Jeremiah was strawberry, and I liked a vanilla chocolate mix, like those Frosties at Wendy's. But thick, thick. Mr. Fisher's milkshakes were better than Wendy's. He had a fancy blender he liked to use that none of us kids were supposed to mess with. Not that he said so, exactly, but we knew not to. And we never did. Until Jeremiah had the idea for Kool-Aid Slurpees. There were no 7-Elevens in Cousins, and even though we had milkshakes, we sometimes yearned for Slurpees. When it was especially hot outside, one of us would say, "Man, I want a Slurpee," and then all of us would be thinking about it all day. So when Jeremiah had this idea for Kool-Aid Slurpees, it was like kismet. He was 9 and I was 8, and at the time it sounded like the greatest idea in the world ever. We eyed the blender, way up high on the top shelf. We knew we'd have to use it. In fact, we longed to use it. But there was that unspoken rule. No one was home but the two of us. No one would have to know.
"What flavor do you want?"
he asked me at last. So it was decided. This was happening. I felt fear and also exhilaration that we were doing this forbidden thing. I rarely broke rules, but this seemed a good one to break. "Black cherry," I said. Jeremiah looked in the cabinet, but there was none. He asked,
"What's your second best flavor?"
"Grape." Jeremiah said that grape Kool-Aid Slurpee sounded good to him, too. The more he said the words, "Kool-Aid Slurpee," the more I liked the sound of it. Jeremiah got a stool and took the blender down from the top shelf. He poured the whole packet of grape into the blender and added 2 big plastic cups of sugar. He let me stir. Then he emptied half the ice dispenser into the blender until it was full to the brim, and he snapped on the top the way we'd seen Mr. Fisher do it a million times.
"Pulse? Frap?"
he asked me. I shrugged. I never paid close enough attention when Mr. Fisher used it. "Probably frap," I said, because I liked the sound of the word frap. So Jeremiah pushed frap, and the blender started to chop and whir. But only the bottom part was getting mixed, so Jeremiah pushed liquefy. It kept at it for a minute, but then the blender started to smell like burning rubber, and I worried it was working too hard with all that ice. "We've got to stir it up more," I said. "Help it along." I got the big wooden spoon and took the top off the blender and stirred it all up. "See?" I said. I put the top back on, But I guess I didn't do it tight enough, because when Jeremiah pushed Frap, our grape Kool-Aid Slurpee went everywhere. All over us. All over the new white counters. All over the floor. All over Mr. Fisher's brown leather briefcase. We stared at each other in horror. "Quick, get paper towels!" Jeremiah yelled, unplugging the blender. I dove for the briefcase, mopping it up with the bottom of my t-shirt. The leather was already staining, and it was sticky. "Oh, man," Jeremiah whispered. "He loves that briefcase." And he did. It had his initials engraved on the brass clasp. He truly loved it. Maybe even more than his blender. I felt terrible. Tears pricked my eyelids. It was all my fault. "I'm sorry," I said. Jeremiah was on the floor, on his hands and knees, wiping. He looked up at me, grape Kool-Aid dripping down his forehead. "It's not your fault." "Yeah, it is," I said, rubbing at the leather. My t-shirt was starting to turn brown from rubbing at the briefcase so hard. "Well, yeah, it kinda is," Jeremiah agreed. Then he reached out and touched his finger to my cheek and licked off some of the sugar. "Tastes good, though." We were giggling and sliding our feet along the floor with paper towels when everyone came back home. They walked in with long paper bags, the kind the lobsters come in, and Stephen and Conrad had ice cream cones. Mr. Fisher said, "What the hell?" Jeremiah scrambled up. "We were just..." I handed the briefcase over to Mr. Fisher, my hand shaking. "I'm sorry," I whispered. "It was an accident." He took it from me and looked at it, at the smeared leather.
"Why were you using my blender?"
Mr. Fisher demanded, but he was asking Jeremiah. His neck was bright red.
"You know you're not to use my blender."
Jeremiah nodded. "I'm sorry," he said. "It was my fault," I said in a small voice. "Oh, Belly," my mother said, shaking her head at me. She knelt on the ground and picked up the soaked paper towels. Susanna had gone to get the mop. Mr. Fisher exhaled loudly.
"Why don't you ever listen when I tell you something? For God's sake! Did I or did I not tell you to never use this blender?"
Jeremiah bit his lip, and from the way his chin was quivering, I could tell he was really close to crying.
"Answer me when I'm talking to you."
Susanna came back in then with her mop and bucket. "Adam, it was an accident. Let it go." She put her arms around Jeremiah.
"Suze, if you baby him, he'll never learn. He'll just stay a little baby," Mr. Fisher said. "Jer, did I or did I not tell you kids never to use the blender?"
Jeremiah's eyes filled up, and he blinked quickly. But a few tears escaped. And then a few more. It was awful. I felt so embarrassed for Jeremiah, and also I felt guilty that it was me who had brought all this upon him. But I also felt relieved that it wasn't me who was the one getting in trouble, crying in front of everyone. And then Conrad said,
"But, Dad, you never did."
He had chocolate ice cream on his cheek. Mr. Fisher turned and looked at him.
"What?"
"You never said it. We knew we weren't supposed to, but you never technically said it."
Conrad looked scared, but his voice was matter-of-fact. Mr. Fisher shook his head and looked back at Jeremiah.
"Go get cleaned up,"
he said roughly. He was embarrassed, I could tell. Susanna glared at him and swept Jeremiah into the bathroom. My mother was wiping down the counters, her shoulders straight and stiff.
"Stephen, take your sister to the bathroom," she said.
Her voice left no room for argument, and Stephen grabbed my arm and took me upstairs. "Do you think I'm in trouble?" I asked Stephen. He wiped my cheeks roughly with a wet piece of toilet paper.
"Yes, but not as much trouble as Mr. Fisher. Mom's gonna rip him a new one."
"What does that mean?" Stephen shrugged.
"Just something I heard. It means he's the one in trouble."
After my face was clean, Stephen and I crept back into the hallway. My mother and Mr. Fisher were arguing. We looked at each other, our eyes huge when we heard our mother snap, "You can be such an asshat, Adam!" I opened my mouth, about to exclaim when Stephen clapped his hand over my mouth and dragged me to the boys' room. He shut the door behind us. His eyes were glittery from all the excitement. Our mother had cussed at Mr. Fisher. I said, "Mom called Mr. Fisher an asshat." I didn't even know what an asshat was, but it sure sounded funny. I pictured a hat that looked like a butt sitting on top of Mr. Fisher's big head. And then I giggled. It was all very exciting and terrible. None of us had ever really gotten in trouble at the summer house. Not big trouble, anyway. It was pretty much a big, trouble-free zone. The mothers were relaxed at the summer house. Where at home, Stephen would get it if he talked back, here, my mother didn't seem to mind as much. Probably because at the cousin's house, us kids weren't the center of the world. My mother was busy doing other things, like potting plants and going to art galleries with Susanna, and sketching and reading books. She was too busy to get angry or bothered. We did not have her full attention. This was both a good and bad thing. Good, because we got away with stuff. If we played out on the beach past bedtime, if we had double dessert, no one really cared. Bad, because I had the vague sense that Stephen and I weren't as important here, that there were other things that occupied my mother's mind. Memories we had no part of, a life before we existed. And also, the secret life inside herself, where Stephen and I didn't exist. It was like when she went on her trips without us. I knew that she did not miss us, or think about us very much. I hated that thought, but it was the truth. The mothers had a whole life separate from us. I guess us kids did, too. Chapter 25. When Jeremiah and Conrad walked up the beach with their boards under their arms, I had this crazy thought that I should try to warn them somehow. Whistle or something. But I didn't know how to whistle. And it was too late anyway. They put the boards under the house, and then they walked up the steps and saw us sitting there. Conrad's whole body tightened up, and I saw Jeremiah mutter, "Shit," under his breath. Then Jeremiah said, "Hey, Dad." Conrad brushed right past us and into the house. Mr. Fisher followed him in, and Jeremiah and I looked at each other for a moment. He leaned close to me and said, "How about you pull the car around while I get our stuff, and then we make a run for it?" I giggled, and then I clapped my hand over my mouth. I doubted Mr. Fisher would appreciate me giggling when all this serious stuff was going on. I stood up and pulled my towel closer around me, under my armpits. Then we went inside, too. Conrad and Mr. Fisher were in the kitchen. Conrad was opening up a beer, not even looking at his dad.
"What the hell are you kids playing at here?"
Mr. Fisher said. His voice sounded really loud and unnatural in the house. He was looking around the kitchen, the living room. Jeremiah began, "Dad," Mr. Fisher looked right at Jeremiah and said,
"Sandy Donati called me this morning and told me what happened. You were supposed to get Conrad back to school, not stay and party and interfere with the sale."
Jeremiah blinked.
"Who's Sandy Donati?" "She's our real estate agent," Conrad said.
I realized my mouth was open, and I snapped it shut. I wrapped my arms around myself tight, trying to turn invisible. Maybe it wasn't too late for me and Jeremiah to make a run for it. Maybe that way he'd never find out that I'd known about the house, too. Would it make a difference that I'd only known about it since this afternoon? I doubted it. Jeremiah looked over at Conrad and then back at his dad.
I didn't know we had a real estate agent. You never told me you were selling the house.
I told you it was a possibility.
You never told me you were actually doing it.
Conrad broke in, speaking only to Jeremiah.
It doesn't matter. He's not selling the house.
He drank his beer calmly, and we all waited to hear what he'd say next.
It's not his to sell.
Yes, it is,
Mr. Fisher said, breathing heavily.
I'm not doing this for me. The money will be for you boys.
You think I care about the money?
Conrad finally looked at him, his eyes cold. His voice was toneless.
I'm not like you. I could give a shit about the money. I care about the house. Mom's house.
Conrad, you have no right to be here. You should leave.
Mr. Fisher swallowed and his Adam's apple bobbed up and down.
No, I won't leave.
Tell Sandy not to bother coming back.
Conrad said the word Sandy like it was an insult, which I guess it was meant to be.
I'm your father,
Mr. Fisher said hoarsely,
and your mother left it to me to decide. This is what she would have wanted.
Conrad's smooth, hard shell cracked, and his voice was shaking when he said,
Don't talk about what she would have wanted. She was my wife, goddammit. I lost her, too.
That might have been true, but it was the exact wrong thing to say to Conrad at that moment. It set him off. He punched the wall closest to him, and I flinched. I was shocked he didn't leave a hole. He said,
You didn't lose her. You left her. You don't know the first thing about what she would have wanted. You were never there. You were a shitty dad and an even shittier husband, so don't bother trying to do the right thing now. You just fuck it all up.
Jeremiah said,
Con, shut up. Just shut up.
Conrad swung around and shouted,
You're still defending him? That's exactly why we didn't tell you.
We?
Jeremiah repeated. He looked at me then, and the stricken look on his face cut right through me. I started to speak, to try to explain, but I only got as far as saying, I just found out today, I swear, when Mr. Fisher interrupted me. He said,
You are not the only one hurting, Conrad. You don't get to talk to me that way. I think I do.
The room was deadly quiet, and Mr. Fisher looked like he might hit Conrad. He was so mad. They stared at each other, and I knew Conrad wouldn't be the one to back down. It was Mr. Fisher who looked away.
The movers are coming back, Conrad. This is happening. You throwing a tantrum can't stop it.
He left soon after. He said he'd be back in the morning, and the words were ominous. He said that he was staying at the inn in town. It was clear that he couldn't wait to get out of that house. The three of us stood around in the kitchen after he was gone, none of us saying anything. Least of all, me. I wasn't even supposed to be there. For once, I wished I was at home with my mother and Stephen and Taylor, away from all of this. Jeremiah was the first to speak.
I can't believe he's really selling the house,
he said almost to himself.
Believe it,
Conrad said harshly.
Why didn't you tell me about it?
Jeremiah demanded. Conrad glanced at me before saying,
I didn't think you needed to know.
Jeremiah's eyes narrowed.
What the hell, Conrad? It's my house, too.
Jer, I only just found out myself.
Conrad propped himself up on the kitchen counter, his head down.
I was at home picking up some clothes. That real estate agent, Sandy, called and left a message on the machine saying movers were coming to get the stuff they packed. I went back to school and got my stuff and I came straight here.
Conrad had dropped school and everything else to come to the summer house, and here we just thought he was a screw-up in need of saving, when in actuality, He was the one doing the saving. I felt guilty for not giving him the benefit of the doubt, and I knew Jeremiah did too. We exchanged a quick look, and I knew we were thinking exactly the same thing. Then I guess he remembered he was pissed at me too, and he looked away.
So that's it then,
Jeremiah said. Conrad didn't answer him right away. Then he looked up and said,
Yeah, I guess it is. Well, great job taking care of all this, Con.
I've been handling this on my own, Conrad snapped. It's not like I had any help from you. Well, maybe if you told me about it, Conrad cut him off. You'd have done what? I would have talked to Dad.
Yeah, exactly.
Conrad could not have sounded more disdainful.
What the hell does that mean? It means that you're so busy being up his ass, you can't see him for who he is.
Jeremiah didn't say anything right away. And I was really afraid of where this was heading. Conrad was looking for a fight, and the last thing we needed was for the two of them to start wrestling on the kitchen floor, breaking things and each other. This time, my mother wasn't here to stop them. There was just me, and that was hardly anything. And then Jeremiah said,
He's our father.
His voice was measured, even, and I let out a tiny breath of relief. There wouldn't be any fight, because Jeremiah wouldn't let it happen. I admired him for that. But Conrad just shook his head in disgust.
He's a dirtbag.
Don't call him that. What kind of guy cheats on his wife and then leaves her when she has cancer? What kind of man does that? I can't even stand to look at him. He makes me sick, playing the martyr now, the grieving widower. But where was he when Mom needed him, huh, Jer?
I don't know, Con. Where were you?
The room went silent, and it felt to me like the air was almost crackling. The way Conrad flinched. The way Jeremiah sucked in his breath right after he said it. He wanted to take it back, I could tell, and he was about to when Conrad said, conversationally,
That's a low blow.
I'm sorry, Jeremiah said. Conrad shrugged, brushing him off like it didn't matter either way. And then Jeremiah said,
Why can't you just let it go?
Why do you have to hold on to all the shitty stuff that's ever happened to you?
Because I live in reality, unlike you. You'd rather live in a fantasy world than see people for who they really are.
He said it in a way that made me wonder who he was really talking about. Jeremiah bristled. He looked at me and then back at Conrad and said,
You're just jealous. Admit it.
Jealous?
You're jealous that Dad and I have an actual relationship now. It's not just all about you anymore, and that kills you.
Conrad actually laughed. It was a bitter, terrible sound.
That's such BS.
He turned to me.
Billy, are you hearing this? Jeremiah thinks I'm jealous.
Jeremiah looked at me like, be on my side, and I knew that if I did, he'd forgive me for not telling him about the house. I hated Conrad for putting me in the middle, for making me choose. I didn't know whose side I was on. They were both right, and they were both wrong. I guess I took too long to answer, because Jeremiah stopped looking at me and said,
You're an asshole, Conrad. You just want everyone to be as miserable as you are.
And then he walked out. The front door slammed behind him. I felt like I should go after him. I felt like I had just let him down when he needed me most. Then Conrad said to me,
Am I an asshole, Billy?
He popped open another beer and he was trying to sound so indifferent, but his hand was shaking. Yeah, I said. You really are. I walked over to the window and I watched Jeremiah getting into his car. It was too late to follow him. He was already pulling out of the driveway. Even though he was pissed, he had his seatbelt on.
"He'll be back,"
Conrad said. I hesitated and then I said, "You shouldn't have said that stuff."
"Maybe not.
You shouldn't have asked me to keep it a secret from him." Conrad shrugged like he was already over it. But then he looked back toward the window and I knew he was worried. He threw me a beer and I caught it. I popped the top off and took a long drink. It hardly even tasted bad. Maybe I was getting used to it. I smacked my lips loudly. He watched me, and there was a funny look on his face.
"So you like beer now, huh?"
I shrugged. "It's all right," I said. And I felt very grown up, but then I added, "I still like Cherry Coke better, though." He almost smiled when he said,
"Same old belly. I bet if we cut your body open, white sugar would come pouring out of you."
"That's me," I said. "Sugar and spice and everything nice." Conrad said,
"I don't know about that."
And then we were both quiet. I took another sip of beer and set it down next to Conrad. "I think you really hurt Jeremiah's feelings." He shrugged.
"He needed a reality check."
"You didn't have to do it like that."
"I think you're the one who hurt Jeremiah's feelings."
I opened my mouth and then closed it. If I asked him what he meant by that, he'd tell me. And I didn't want him to. So I drank my beer and said, "What now?" Conrad didn't let me off the hook that easy. He said,
"What now with you and Jeremiah? Or with you and me?"
He was teasing me and I hated him for it. I could feel my cheeks burning as I said, "What now with this house?" was what I meant. He leaned back against the counter.
"There's nothing to do, really. I mean, I could get a lawyer. I'm 18 now. I could try and stall. But I doubt it would do anything. My dad's stubborn, and he's greedy."
Hesitantly, I said, "I don't know that he's doing it out of greed, Conrad." Conrad's face sort of closed off.
"Trust me, he is."
I couldn't help but ask, "What about summer school?"
"I couldn't care less about school right now,
but
just leave it, Belly."
Then he walked out of the kitchen, opened the sliding door, and went outside. Conversation over. Chapter 26. Jeremiah.
My whole life I've looked up to Conrad. He's always been smarter, faster, just better. The thing is, I never really begrudged him that. He was just Conrad. He couldn't help being good at things. He couldn't help that he never lost in Uno or races or grades. Maybe part of me needed that. Someone to look up to. My big brother. The guy who couldn't lose. But there was this time when I was 13. We were wrestling around in the living room, had been for half an hour. My dad was always trying to get us to wrestle. He'd been on the wrestling team in college, and he liked teaching us new techniques. We were wrestling, and my mom was in the kitchen cooking bacon-wrapped scallops because we were having people over that night, and they were my dad's favorite. "Lock him in, Con!" my dad was saying. We were really getting into it. We'd already knocked over one of my mom's silver candlesticks. Conrad was breathing hard. He'd expected to beat me easily, but I was getting good. I wasn't giving up. He had my head locked under his arm, and then I locked his knee, and we were both on the ground. I could feel something shift. I almost had him. I was going to win. My dad was going to be so proud. When I had him pinned, my dad said, "Connie, I told you to keep your knees bent." I looked up at my dad, and I saw the look on his face.
He had that look he got sometimes when Conrad wasn't doing something right, all tight around the eyes and irritated. He never looked at me like that. He didn't say, "Good job, Jer." He just started criticizing Conrad, telling him all the things he could have done better. And Conrad took it. He was nodding, his face red, sweat pouring down his forehead. Then he nodded at me and said, in a way that I knew he really meant it, "Good job, Jer." That's when my dad chimed in and said, "Yeah, good job, Jer." All of a sudden, I wanted to cry. I didn't want to beat Conrad ever again. It wasn't worth it. After all that stuff back at the house, I got in my car and I just started driving. I didn't know where I was going, and part of me didn't even want to go back. Part of me wanted to leave Conrad to deal with this shitstorm by himself, the way he'd wanted it in the first place. Let Belly deal with him. Let them have at it. I drove for half an hour. But even as I was doing it, I knew that, eventually, I would turn back around. I couldn't just leave. That was Con's style, not mine. And it was low, what I said about him not being there for our mom. It wasn't like he knew she was gonna die. He was at college. It wasn't his fault. But he wasn't the one who was there when everything got bad again. It all happened so fast. He couldn't have known. If he had known, he would have stayed home. I know he would have. Our dad was never going to win a Father of the Year award. He was flawed, that was for sure. But when it counted, there at the end, he came home. He said all the right things. He made our mom happy. Conrad just couldn't see it. He didn't want to. I didn't go back to the house right away. First, I stopped at the pizza place. It was dinner time and there wasn't any food at the house. A kid I knew, Mikey, was working the register. I ordered a large pizza with everything and then I asked him if Ron was out on a delivery. Mikey said yeah, that Ron would be back soon, that I should wait. Ron lived in Cousins year-round. He went to community college during the day and he delivered pizzas at night. He was an okay guy. He'd been buying underage kids beer for as long as I could remember. If you gave him a 20... he'd hook you up. All I knew was, if this was going to be our last night, we couldn't go out like this. When I got back to the house, Conrad was sitting on the front porch. I knew he was waiting for me. I knew he felt bad for what he'd said. I honked the horn, stuck my head out the window and yelled, "Come help me with this stuff!" He came down to the car, checked out the cases of beer and the bag of liquor, and said, "Ron?" "Yep." I hoisted up two cases of beer and handed them over. "We're having a party." Chapter 27. After the fight, after Mr. Fisher left, I went up to my room and stayed there. I didn't want to be around when Jeremiah got back in case he and Conrad went for a second round. Unlike Stephen and me, those two hardly ever fought. In all the time I'd known them, I'd only seen them do it, like, 3 times. Jeremiah looked up to Conrad, and Conrad looked out for Jeremiah. It was as simple as that. I started looking around in the drawers and closet to see if there was anything of mine left there. My mom was pretty strict about us taking all our stuff every time we left, but you never knew. I figured I might as well make sure. Mr. Fisher would probably just tell the movers to throw all the junk out. In the bottom of the desk drawer, I found an old composition notebook from my Harriet the Spy days. It was colored in pink and green and yellow highlighter. I'd followed the boys around for days, taking notes in it until I drove Stephen crazy and he told Mom on me. I'd written, "June 28th.
Caught Jeremiah dancing in the mirror when he thought no one was watching. Too bad I was. June 30th. Conrad ate all the blue popsicles again, even though he's not supposed to. But I didn't tell. July 1st. Stephen kicked me for no reason. And on and on. I'd gotten sick of it by mid-July and quit. I had been such a little tag-along then. 8-year-old me would have loved to have been included in this last adventure. Would have loved the fact that I got to hang out with the boys while Stephen had to stay at home. I found a few other things. Junk like a half-used pot of cherry lip gloss, a couple of dusty hair bands. On the shelf, there were my old Judy Blooms and then my V.C. Andrews books hidden behind them. I figured I'd just leave all that stuff behind. The one thing I had to take was Junior Mint, my old stuffed polar bear, the one Conrad had won me that time at the boardwalk a million years ago. I couldn't just let Junior Mint get thrown out like he was junk. He'd been special to me, once upon a time. I stayed upstairs for a while, just looking at my old stuff. I found one other thing worth keeping. A toy telescope. I remember the day my father bought it for me. It had been in one of the little antique stores along the boardwalk, and it was expensive, but he said I should have it. There was a time when I was obsessed with stars and comets and constellations, and he thought I might grow up to be an astronomer. It turned out to be a phase, but it was fun while it lasted. I liked the way my father looked at me then. Like I had taken after him, my father's daughter. He still looked at me that way, sometimes. When I asked for Tabasco sauce at restaurants. When I turned the radio station to NPR without him having to ask. Tabasco sauce I liked, but NPR not as much. I did it because I knew it made him proud. I was glad he was my dad and not Mr. Fisher. He never would have yelled or cussed at me or gotten mad about spilled Kool-Aid. He wasn't that kind of man. I'd never appreciated enough just what kind of man he was. Chapter 28. My father rarely came to the summer house. For a weekend in August, maybe, but that was pretty much it. It never occurred to me to wonder why. There was this one weekend he and Mr. Fisher came up at the same time. As if they had so much in common. As if they were friends or something. They couldn't be more different. Mr. Fisher liked to talk, 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 and my dad only spoke if he had something to say. Mr. Fisher was always watching SportsCenter, while my dad rarely watched TV at all, and definitely not sports. The parents were going to a fancy restaurant in Dyerstown. A band played there on Saturday nights, and they had a little dance floor. It was strange to think of my parents dancing. I'd never seen them dance before. But I was sure Susanna and Mr. Fisher danced all the time. I'd seen them once, in the living room. I remembered how Conrad had blushed and turned away. I was lying on my stomach, on Susanna's bed, watching my mother and her get ready in the master bathroom. Susanna had convinced my mother to wear a dress of hers. It was red and it had a deep V-neck. "What do you think, Beck?" my mother asked uncertainly. I could tell she felt funny about it. She usually wore pants. "I think you look amazing. I think you should keep it. Red is so you, Lore." Susanna was curling her lashes and opening her eyes wide in the mirror. When they left, I would practice using the eyelash curler. My mother didn't have one. I knew the contents of her makeup bag. One of those plastic green Clinique gift-with-purchase bags. It had a Burt's Bees chapstick and an espresso eyeliner, a pink and green tube of Maybelline mascara, and a bottle of tinted sunscreen. Boring. Susanna's makeup case, though, was a treasure trove. It was a navy snakeskin case with a heavy gold clasp, and her initials were engraved on it. Inside, she had little iPods and palettes and sable brushes and perfume samples. She never threw away anything. I like to sort through it and organize everything in neat rows according to color. Sometimes she gave me a lipstick or a sample eyeshadow, nothing too dark. "Belly, you want me to do your eyes?" Susanna asked me. I sat up. "Yeah! Beck, please don't give her hooker eyes again," my mother said, running a comb through her wet hair. Susanna made a face. "It's called a smoky eye, Lore." "Yeah, Mom, it's a smoky eye," I piped up. Susanna crooked her finger at me. "Come here, Belly." I scampered into the bathroom and propped myself up on the counter. I loved to sit on that counter with my legs dangling, listening in on everything like one of the girls. She dipped a little brush into a pot of black eyeliner. "Close your eyes," she said. I obeyed, and Susanna dragged the brush along my lash line, expertly blending and smudging with the ball of her thumb. Then she swept shadow across my eyelids, and I wriggled in my seat excitedly. I loved it when Susanna made me up. I couldn't wait for the moment of unveiling. "Are you and Mr. Fisher gonna dance tonight?" I asked. Susanna laughed. "I don't know. Maybe." "Mom, will you and Dad?" My mother laughed, too. "I don't know. Probably not. Your father doesn't like to dance." "Dad's boring," I said, trying to twist around and get a peek at my new look. Gently, Susanna put her hands on my shoulders and sat me straight. "He's not boring," my mother said. "He just has different interests. You like it when he teaches you the constellations, don't you?" I shrugged. "Yeah, and he's very patient, and he always listens to your stories," my mother reminded me. "True, but what does that have to do with being boring?" "Not much, I suppose. But it has to do with being a good father, which I think he is." "He definitely is," Susanna agreed, and she and my mother exchanged a look over my head. "Take a look at yourself." I swiveled around and looked in the mirror. My eyes were very smoky and gray and mysterious. I felt like I should be the one going out dancing. "See, she doesn't look like a hooker," Susanna said triumphantly. "She looks like she has a black eye," my mother said. "No, I don't. I look mysterious. I look like a countess." I hopped off the bathroom counter. "Thanks, Susanna. Anytime, sugar." We air-kissed like two ladies who lunch. Then she took me by the hand and walked me over to her bureau. She handed me her jewelry box and said, "Belly, you have the best taste. Will you help me pick out some jewelry to wear tonight?" I sat on her bed with the wooden box and sifted through it carefully. I found what I was looking for. Her dangly opal earrings with the matching opal ring. "Wear these," I said, holding the jewelry out to her in the palm of my hand. Susanna obeyed, and as she fastened the earrings, my mother said, "I don't know if that really goes." In retrospect, I don't think it really did go. But I loved that opal jewelry so much. I admired it more than anything. So I said, "Mom, what do you know about style?" Right away, I worried she'd be mad, but it had slipped out. And it was true, after all. My mother knew about as much about jewelry as she did about makeup. But Susanna laughed, and so did my mother. "Go downstairs and tell the men we'll be ready to go in 5, Countess," my mother ordered. I jumped out of bed and curtsied dramatically. "Yes, Mum." They both laughed. My mother said, "Go, you little imp." I ran downstairs. When I was a kid, anytime I had to go anywhere, I ran. "They're almost ready," I yelled. Mr. Fisher was showing my dad his new fishing rod. My dad looked relieved to see me, and he said, "Belly, what have they done to you?" "Susanna made me up. Do you like it?" My dad beckoned me closer, regarding me with serious eyes. "I'm not sure."
You look very mature.
I do?
Yes. Very, very mature.
I tried to hide my delight as I made a place for myself in the crook of my dad's arm, my head right by his side. For me, there was no better compliment than being called mature. They all left a little while later, the dads in pressed khakis and button-down shirts, and the moms in their summer dresses. Mr. Fisher and my dad didn't look so different when they dressed up like that. My dad hugged me goodbye and said that if I was still awake when they got back, we'd sit on the deck a while and look for shooting stars. My mother said they'd probably be back too late, but my dad winked at me. On the way out, he whispered something to my mother that made her cover her mouth and laugh a low, throaty kind of laugh. I wonder what he said. It was one of the last times I remember them being happy. I really wish I had enjoyed it more. My parents had always been stable, as boring as two parents could be. They never fought. Taylor's parents fought all the time. I'd be over for a sleepover, and Mr. Jewell would come home late, and her mom would be really pissy, stomping around in her slippers and banging pots. We'd be at the dinner table, and I would sink lower and lower into my seat, and Taylor would just go on talking about stupid stuff. Like whether or not Veronica Gerard wore the same socks 2 days in a row in gym, or if we should volunteer to be water girls for the JV football team when we were freshmen. When her parents got divorced, I asked Taylor if, in some little way, she was relieved. She said no. She said that even though they had fought all the time, at least they had still been a family. "Your parents never even fought," she said. And I could hear the disdain in her voice. I knew what she meant. I wondered about it, too. How could two people who had once been passionately in love not even fight? Didn't they care enough to fight it out? To fight not just with each other, but also for their marriage? Were they ever really in love? Did my mother ever feel about my dad the way I felt about Conrad? Alive, crazy, drunk with tenderness? Those were the questions that haunted me. I didn't want to make the same mistakes my parents made. I didn't want my love to fade away one day like an old scar. I wanted it to burn forever. Chapter 29. When I finally went back downstairs, it was dark out and Jeremiah was back. He and Conrad were sitting on the couch, watching TV like the fight had never happened. I guessed it was that way with boys. Whenever Taylor and I fought, we were mad for at least a week and there was a power struggle over who got custody of which friends. "Whose side are you on?" we'd demand of Katie or Marcy. We'd say mean things that you can't take back and then we'd cry and make up. Somehow I doubted Conrad and Jeremiah had been crying and making up while I'd been upstairs. I wondered if I was forgiven, too, for keeping a secret from Jeremiah, for not taking a side. His side. Because it was true. We'd come here together as partners, a team, and when he'd needed me, I'd let him down. I lingered there by the stairs for a second, unsure of whether or not to go over, and then Jeremiah looked up at me and I knew I was. Forgiven, that is. He smiled. A real smile, and a real Jeremiah smile was the kind that could melt ice cream. I smiled back, grateful as anything.
"I was just about to come get you," he said. "We're having a party."
There was a pizza box on the coffee table. "A pizza party?" I asked. Susanna used to have pizza parties for us kids all the time. It was never just pizza for dinner. It was a pizza party. Except this time, with beer. And tequila. So this was it. Our last night. It would have felt a lot more real if Stephen had been there, too. It would have felt complete. Us four together again.
I ran into some people in town. They're gonna come over later and bring a keg.
A keg? I repeated.
Yeah. A keg, you know, of beer.
Oh, right, I said. A keg. Then I sat down on the ground and opened the pizza box. There was one slice left, and it was a small one. You guys are such pigs, I said, stuffing it into my mouth.
Whoops, sorry,
Jeremiah said. Then he went into the kitchen, and when he came back, he had three cups. He had one balanced in the crook of his elbow. He gave that one to me.
Cheers,
he said. He handed Conrad a cup, too. I sniffed it suspiciously. It was light brown with a lime wedge floating on top. Smells strong, I said.
That's because it's tequila, he sang.
He lifted his cup in the air.
To the last night.
To the last night, we repeated. They both drank theirs in one shot. I took a teeny sip of mine, and it wasn't too bad. I'd never had tequila before. I drank